when it happens, follow the leader, 760 KFMB.
San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB, presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
Good evening. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you live from KFMB Studios in Kearny Mesa with 50,000 watts of power being heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, LA County, and up the coast to Seattle on a good night. And now time to introduce the main man of the hour, my co-host. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He's a family office expert. He is a marathon runner and an all-around good guy. His name is Richard Muzio. Richard, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great. Had a fun Sunday. My daughter Demi and I, Demi's in studio with us tonight. She's sitting here doing her homework. We ran the Petco 5K at Del Mar Racetrack this morning. I've never seen a race with thousands of dogs. It was quite hilarious, raising funds for the Petco Foundation. So that was fun. And then this afternoon, I split two sets of tennis with best-selling author Greg Reed.
Wow.
Three feet from gold, so terrific. I'm sort of tired.
Terrific. Well, we've got a lot of gold on the show tonight, and I don't
let's get moving.
I don't want to delay too much, but tonight's show is all about Allegiance, a new American musical, the great blockbuster hit at the Old Globe, broke all kinds of box office records on its way to Broadway, and we're going to actually do guests three in a row tonight. It's kind of a unique approach, but we have the two producers and one of the main stars of the show, and everyone knows his name. But the first guest is Lorenzo Tione. He's a producer. We're going to have George Takei, believe it or not, from Star Trek and the show, and then finish up with Wendy Gillespie. But right now, let's get into our interview with Lorenzo. All right, so we're with Lorenzo Tione, producer of Allegiance, the Old Globe smash, soon to be Broadway smash, I'm sure. But Lorenzo, you've got an interesting history. For one thing, you're young, so I think you're a prodigy of theater. But give us a little bit about your background, where you're born, your education, born and raised, etc. Because you kind of have a global.
Yeah, well, I was born in Italy, where I grew up in Italy. And I didn't move to the United States until I was 21, and primarily to go to school. I moved to Texas, which was a big change from Milan, where I grew up, to Austin, Texas, and went to school in Austin, and worked in technology for a number of years. I actually, you know, really do think about myself more as an entrepreneur than anything else, and have been building companies and products.
So you went to University of Texas in Austin?
Went to University of Texas in Austin for computer science.
Computer design.
Computer science.
Computer science.
And then, moved to Palo Alto, California, worked in Silicon Valley as a researcher, started an internet startup, technology company that was building a new search technology, which was later then acquired by Microsoft and became part of the relaunch technology as Bing. Bing.com did not exist prior to the acquisition of a number of other companies, including the one I had started called PowerSet.
Wow. So
That was sort of the first foray into entrepreneurship, and I truly, really, you know, what I probably discovered about myself was I loved that part of creating, taking an idea that you think is going to be really impactful and making it happen, you know, creating the circumstances around it that can make it bloom. And, from the team to the funding to building a story behind it and creating a support and an early audience and then, you know, building out that audience. And the history of how Allegiance came about, you know, sort of built upon those foundations in terms of the things that attracted me to the project of Allegiance, besides the incredible, you know, sort of value of the story, was really the idea of taking something that no one had ever done and making it, you know, sort of bringing it to existence.
So obviously you had skills in technology and then the business skills, did you take classes in that too, or you just picked it up as you...
I think I had the incredible fortune of having great mentors and great people I worked with, and that I had the ability to observe and learn from. During my first company, I was primarily the tech, you know, founder, but I had great people I was working with and learned from them a tremendous amount.
It's an important point, mentorship. everyone says, oh, he was a self-made man or self-made woman. Mm-hmm. I say malarkey. You know, Joe Biden says that too, but anyway.
you know, we need good influences in our life and people, you know, willing to help, or you attach your talents with others. And
true. And it's something that I recognize the value of in my own experience, and that I've tried to sort of give back in. I do a lot of work with other entrepreneurs, and I run a non-for-profit I started called Startout, which helps LGBT entrepreneurs build and grow businesses. And mentorship and networking is a huge part of it, and education is really paramount to one's, you know, it's not ideas. Ideas are, everybody says ideas are dime a dozen, and it's true. Great ideas are plentiful, but it's truly execution and knowing how to take an idea and bring it to existence that makes a difference.
And getting the team behind that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Robert Evans, the famous Hollywood producer, I don't know if he was a director, but he made, you know, many legendary films, Chinatown, Godfather, he was involved in all those. He said, success is where preparation meets opportunity. I thought that was a very insightful quote of
There's another famous quote that says success is, I think, 1% innovation and 99% perspiration.
Yeah. all true. So the love of theater, had you been a big theater lover all along for your entire life?
You know, I've always appreciated and loved theater. I think one passion that I've always had, and I think it's true of every entrepreneur, is that in order to build anything that has an impact and that makes people feel and move, you have to be able to tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
And great entrepreneurs and, you know, great salesmen are great storytellers.
Mm-hmm.
And the passion for theater was always something that was there, but never something I was, that was a motivation for me to be like, I have to work in theater. It was never, much more than a passing thought.
Mm-hmm.
But my co-creator and co-book writer and is the composer and lyricist for the show, Jay Kuo, and I had been good friends for a number of years. And the project of Allegiance came upon us when we both were completely by circumstance at a point in our lives where we were looking for new projects and new adventures, and decided that this was a very worthy thing to try and do.
Mm-hmm.
We thought we'd recognize the potential, we recognize the uniqueness of it,
mm-hmm.
we recognize that the country as a whole was at a time where it's open to the story to
be
told.
Maybe in the 80s or a different era, this could not be done.
Absolutely.
So,
and George goes into telling us how it reminded him of his own father and his family when, as a child of four, armed guards came and took his family away from their home and brought them to an internment camp where they lived for 4 years.
Where was he at the time, and where they moved?
He lived in Los Angeles at the time. And to be precise, what happened to Japanese Americans in the area where he lived, they were suddenly, shortly after Pearl Harbor, taken following the signing of Executive Order 9066, which President Roosevelt signed, and which declared this entire area of the United States as a zone where Japanese Americans could not live freely. So they were all rounded up, and his family, along with other people in that area, were taken to a racetrack, the Santa Anita racetrack around Los Angeles, where they were left for months living in the worst possible conditions. I mean, living in horse stalls with no sanitation, and they didn't even know what would happen of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't know if they would be moved somewhere. They weren't really sure if they should be in fear for their own life and safety. I mean, it was a very, 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 horrible situation to be in. And then a few months later, after all the camps actually had been built, all of these families were moved into a number of different camps across the southern United States. Some of which were in California, but the one where he and his family was sent was in Arkansas. It was called Roar Camp. And he lived in two different camps. He lived in Roar Camp in Arkansas. And then one egregious thing that happened was that at some point the United States government required of all Japanese Americans who were interned to sign what's called a questionnaire, a loyalty questionnaire.
Mm-hmm.
And many questions were asked of the internees, but some of them were, you know, in a way aimed at determining who were the disloyal or the troublemakers. And you know, we could go at length and talk about this, but these were questions that were insulting in a way, mm-hmm. of American citizens whose liberty and freedom had been taken away from them, and in a sense also misleading questions. Yeah. And some people who answered in certain ways to these questions were marked as troublemakers and taken to an even harsher camp in the northern plains of California called Tule Lake. Mm-hmm. And his family, because of his father and mother's answers, were amongst the people that were taken to this camp. So he lived in two different camps, at Rower Camp, Arkansas, and Tule Lake.
So he's a boy of 4 years old. What year? 42, I guess they were?
It was 1942, February 19th, 1942 was when, 1942 was when the Executive Order 9066 was signed. So I think I think they were moved in, you know, late summer mm-hmm. from the Santa Anita racetrack. They were moved into Roar, and then about a year later, they were moved into Tule Lake.
And then when were they allowed?
1945.
Yeah. So, wow. Well, you know, look, we've got Guantanamo Bay now. Mm-hmm. You know, these things happen.
You know, truly, when we heard about the story from George, you know, that evening, we heard about him telling us that, we were inspired to start, you know, reading so much and researching so much. And a few weeks later, we wrote back to George, you know, in a very kind of sort of, you know, thinking the worst thing that can happen is he'll say no. But we told him, look, you know, for the
So you and Jay had this concept, maybe we should...
Yeah, so we were on this trip, and we spent no other time than talking about this and researching it. And 3 weeks later, we had a title song, and a treatment for what at that time was a very different story and a different show than it's been over the course of the last 4.5 years that we've developed this. But we wrote back to George and said, we're doing this, and we think you should do this with us. And he wrote back saying, telling the story of the internment of Japanese Americans to the widest possible audience has been my lifelong mission.
Wow.
And I could easily see this as being my legacy project. And he does call this his legacy project.
I'm getting goosebumps.
We did too at that time. He said he wanted to see this through with us. And he's been part of the project ever since. And shortly after that, you know, the incomparable Leia Salonga was also attached to the project. And she's been part of it since the very beginning.
So Leia is amazing in this show.
Yes, she is.
I mean, did you know of her? But I mean, who put the George help find her?
No. You know, it's interesting. You kind of think about these things with your dream cap on, and mm-hmm. you say, well, we need an Asian leading lady. Who do we ask, right? And mm-hmm. you know, and when you think about musical theater and musical theater voices and Asian actresses, I mean, there's just no other name that comes to mind before Leia Salonga. So, you know, Miss Saigon, Tony Award winner when she was 17, and
so you got Joe DiMaggio and Babe Ruth right off the start there. I mean, you guys had the Yankees. I mean,
you know, the reason why the way that Leia got attached to the project is also a very fortuitous circumstance, because you know, we certainly had in mind, well, we got to ask Leia. And we kind of flanked her. We mm-hmm. sent her the material through multiple people who mm-hmm. could reach out to her and her agent and so on. But there were two things that happened that played to our advantage that we had absolutely no idea. The first one was that we had decided to do the first presentation in L.A., mm-hmm. of all places, at the Japanese American National Museum, which has been, you know, a sort of a great institution that has continued to further along the message of mm-hmm. the internment. And Leia has family in Los Angeles, and we didn't know, so it was not too much of a stretch for her to be out there, and we were willing to bring her out and mm-hmm. work with her for a couple of days. But the second most important thing was, she's a big Star Trek fan. And the idea of working with Sulu for a weekend was actually very fun and attractive to her, to the point where we had our very first rehearsals to the show in George Takei's living room. And here Leia Salonga arrives, and within minutes, she's tweeting to her million plus followers, I'm in Sulu's living room.
So she was beamed up, and well, this is great, you know. So all the stars have aligned for you, and really appreciate you taking time to be on our show.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
And you know, we're just going to move along, and we'll get for the rest of the program. So thank you so much.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Good luck with everything.
Thank you.
I'm sure we'll be hearing more things.
Yeah, we're looking to bring the show to Broadway by the fall. So, mm-hmm. you know, hopefully everything will align in that direction. And it's an interesting and long road ahead. And it's been a long road so far, but we're very excited about
where
we're
going. You're all on the Starship Enterprise. Uh-huh. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Jeff. Okay.
Welcome back to It's Your Money and Your Life. And now we are joined by the star of Star Trek and Allegiance, none other than George Takei.
Hello. How are you doing? This is Joe Vecchio, and my co-host Richard Musio is here.
Hi, Joe, and hello, Richard.
Hey, we are just thrilled to have you as our guest here to talk about your history and Allegiance and all that. But how do you, to get to just start out, though, I've read your Wikipedia page. It's fascinating. What do you think, what accounts for the great popularity and cult following of Star Trek? I have my ideas. I wanted to see if you had had some.
Well, I think the vision of the future that Gene Roddenberry brought to the show, mm-hmm. for one thing, he looked to the future, you know, but so much of science fiction sees the future as a dystopian society, you know, civilization having failed and monkeys having taken over, you know.
Charlton Heston, too.
Exactly. In loincloth. But what Gene Roddenberry said, or how he viewed the future, was if we have competence in our inventive capacity and our problem-solving capacity and our innovative genius, then we can overcome whatever challenges that we fear, have, and that we can prevail and face more challenges. You know, there is no end to challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And the other statement that he made was, he said the Starship Enterprise was a metaphor for Starship Earth, and it was the diversity of this planet coming together and working in concert, contributing each our own unique talents, intelligence, cultural background, experiences, that we can come up with the solutions, rather than that one singular vantage point, you know, all these various different vantage points and talents coming together. It was a very optimistic view, and I think that's what engaged and fascinated our audience.
And I guess it did take on diversity and bigotry head on, and shows, I guess, didn't really deal with that too much up to that time, right? Maybe a little bit, I guess, Raisin in the Sun and things like that, but
That wasn't a television series.
Right.
This was a unique television series.
Right.
And, you know, using science fiction, Star Trek dealt with the issues of the times, the civil rights movement, the Vietnam War, the Cold War, you know, disguised. And we were particularly big on college campuses because they were able to see through the science fiction to the message that was hidden behind the science fiction.
Genius. It was genius.
And I think that's why it's prevailed many, many generations now. Star Trek, in 4 more years, is going to be celebrating its 50th anniversary.
Oh, my
golden
gosh.
Anniversary.
You
Isn't
guys,
that amazing?
You guys and the Beach Boys.
Well, what we guys did was we kept changing generations. You know, they had the Next Generation and Deep Space Nine and Enterprise and so forth.
Right.
Well, now they're going back to the original characters: Kirk, Spock, McCoy, Scotty, Uhura, Chekhov, and Sulu.
Yeah.
But with fresher, younger, more dewy skin faces.
Yeah. Now you're in touch.
And there's going to be another Star Trek movie coming at you this year in May.
Isn't
that amazing?
Part what? Part 12? Or what?
Oh, no. It's like 14 or 15.
Oh, my God. It'll go on forever.
You are behind the time.
It'll go on forever. Now, you're still in touch with a lot of the character, or the actors.
The
from
characters.
The show.
Yeah, they're characters.
He was describing Shatner there.
Yeah, well, he's...
He's come
grown
around.
As an actor, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
No,
I wish I had his hair. I'll tell you that much. Because I wish I had his hair because I could use some. But in any case,
he could just peel it off and share it.
He's got a nice piece there. So.
He's had that ever since our television days.
Are you kidding me? Wow.
Not at all. But mine's real. It's thinning now. Yeah. There's less. In fact, when I go on the set for some of the TV shows that I do, the cameraman complains that I'm providing him a shining performance.
Oh, really?
On the pate of my head. The hair's real, but it's getting a little thin.
Yeah,
and I glow. I'm brilliant up there.
Yes.
I tell them, oh, I thought you wanted shining performances. Yeah. I can be brilliant for you.
Now,
so I want to ask you, so speaking of brilliance, we got to get over to Allegiance, because I thought that was brilliant.
Oh, well, thank you. You saw it.
It was amazing. Yeah. And the, the whole concept of allegiance, who are you, where's the loyalty? To your family, to this country, to your home country, to your heritage? I mean, it was...
Or to ultimately to yourself.
Or to yourself, right.
Yeah.
Just fascinating questions came out of that.
We are back with some music from Allegiance, and George Takei is still on the line. But before we do that, we have to go over to Richard to thank some sponsors.
Thanks to UBS and Mr. Michael Quaranta. Of course, last week's guest, Carl Sheeler with Business Valuations Limited, another great show. Sean Puckett with Regions Bank. Jason Kruger, soon to be a new daddy, actually in a matter of days, with Signature Analytics. Joel Grushkin and Cost Segregation Initiatives. Rich Gaines, the best estate planning attorney in town at Family Legacy Legal, and our favorite CPAs, Polito Epic. CPAs. Also, we have a special thank you and a special guest in the studio. That would be the genius behind the iymoney.com website. And Demi Musio, who is that?
Thank you to PopX Graphics and Courtney for making my amazing business math logo.
Terrific. But back to the show.
Thank you. And you can find out all about our sponsors on our website, iymoney.com. And of course, all these podcasts will be there too. But let's get back to more about Allegiance with George Takei. George, what was your role in the production? I mean, obviously, you had the story, the history, the personal part of it. But as far as the production of the play, did you help write some of it or
collaborate? You know, the Allegiance story was born. We're headed toward Broadway very appropriately because it was sparked in a Broadway theater. I'll tell you. It was almost foreordained.
Yeah.
My hubby Brad and I go to the theater almost every night when we're in New York. And one night we were in the theater very early before the play began. And two guys came in and sat in front of us. And one heard me talking to Brad and turned around and said, he recognized my voice. And he said, "You're George Takei, aren't you?" And so we had a brief chat, and then the play began, and then during the intermission we chatted again. And after the play we went back saying they were nice guys, and they obviously are passionate theater lovers based on the conversation we had.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the next night we went to see the Tony Award-winning a musical, In the Heights. And when we arrived at the theater was quite... filled already, and we found our seats, and we were about to sit down when this time, not in front of us, but the same two guys were in the very same row, about four or five seats separated from us, and because they were occupied, we just waved to each other, and we sat down, and the play began. And near the end of the first act, this is about the Dominican community in the Upper West Side, New York, in Washington Heights, and they're having their various struggles. And this one family has a bright daughter, and the father really wants to provide her with all that she needs to get on the upward mobility escalator in American society, but he can't because of his economic condition and the various struggles that a minority community in New York experiences. And near the end of the first act, he has a song titled Inutil, which means useless. He feels useless because he wants to do so much for his daughter, and he can't. And for some odd reason, that triggered memories of my father. Mm-hmm. In the we were sent to a internment camp in Arkansas, in the swamps of Arkansas. Mm-hmm. And I was the oldest. I had a younger brother, a year younger than me, and a baby sister who was still a baby. And he felt useless. He wanted to do so much for us, but yet we had this unknown future. Here we are incarcerated behind barbed wire fences, sentry towers with machine guns pointed down at us, searchlight at night when we made the night runs to the latrine. You know, and what is going to happen to his children?
And you were 4 years old, right?
I was 5 years old.
Five, yeah.
My brother was four.
Yeah.
And my sister was not quite one. And my father was anguished by that. I was too young to really understand that then, but as a teenager, I had after-dinner conversations with my father, and I came to understand how tortured he was by the uncertainty and the hopelessness of the future for his children.
Yeah.
And I'm one of these people that sob, not cry, sob at tearjerkers. You know, it's not just a sniffle. It's
I embarrass
Brad no end.
So George, there's a Japanese saying. I think it's shikata ga nai. Is that is that what you're describing?
Nothing can be.
It's like nothing can be helped or done. Or
And then, of course, the intermission comes and the lights blaze on. And the two guys who turned out to be Jay Kuo and Lorenzo Tioni, Jay is the composer, lyricist, an enormously talented musician, and Lorenzo is the producer and also co-writer. And they, since we waved to them before getting seated, they clambered over the knees and they came to say to chat with us again, and they saw me frantically wiping the tears off my face. And they asked, what prompted that? And so I told them about our wartime incarceration. And that's where so we went out for drinks after the play, and we talked about it. And then the next night we went out for dinner together, and we talked about the internment and how we can turn that into a musical further there. Hmm. So that's how Allegiance was born, in a Broadway theater.
Gotcha.
And this fall it's going back where it was born.
And you guys can sit together again.
We've not only sat together, talked together, and eaten with each other, but sweated and celebrated together. It's been a wonderful teamwork that we've had.
You know, I was thinking the other day, George, though, post 9/11, and what are your thoughts regarding Guantanamo, Abu Ghraib, and the Muslim community? And, you know, it's kind of another rendition, for lack of a better term, of what happens when nations conflict. And
we Japanese Americans immediately understood what might happen. And at that time, I was chairman of the board of the Japanese American National Museum, which we founded here in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And so we organized a candlelight ceremony in our plaza. We have it's a three-building complex, and we have a plaza in the middle. And we invited leaders from the Arab American community to speak, as well as older Japanese Americans who experienced the internment. And they spoke. And our museum happens to be about three blocks from the Los Angeles City Hall. So that candlelight ceremony turned into a candlelight march around City Hall, and then winding up back at our plaza. And then we organized a symposium with Kitty Feldy of NPR moderating. Mm-hmm. And we invited again a leader from the Arab American community, an older Japanese American, executive director of the L.A. County Human Relations Commission, representative from the L.A. Sheriff's Department, and we also extended an invitation to the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation. They were the only ones who demurred, because they were the ones that immediately swooped down on Japanese Americans as well as on Arab Americans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the innocent Arab Americans were, for example, there was a chemist in New Jersey, and they swooped in and they asked, "Are you Abu Ali or whatever, you know, what his
mm-hmm.
name is?"
Mm-hmm.
And when he said yes, they immediately clamped handcuffs on him
mm-hmm.
and marched him through his place of employment, all his co-workers, you know.
Wow.
I mean, it's that perp walk,
yeah.
that humiliation,
yeah.
you know, for no reason at all. And his family was, of course, worried, sick. Mm-hmm. They didn't know where the husband and father was taken and why he was taken
mm-hmm.
and when he would be released. And they were, you know, on pins and needles and anxiety for a few months. And then he came back, you know, unannounced, and there was no charge, no trial, nothing, just on the suspicion that he might be a terrorist. That sort of thing happened.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
And we knew that, and I mean, thank God it didn't happen on the wholesale scale that it happened to Japanese Americans after Pearl Harbor. But nevertheless, instead of internment, the word was detention.
Yeah.
Detention.
Arab American leaders were detained with no charge, no trial, no due process.
Well, the good thing is, though, you know, there's redemption in your case. I mean, you've lived long enough, and you know, to take it full circle.
Of sorts, and yeah. very tardy and insufficient.
Yeah.
In 1988, after all the hoo-ha in Congress and some resistance to it. The Civil Liberties Act of 1988 was signed, and President Reagan, on behalf of the United States, apologized to Japanese Americans for that unconstitutional incarceration and pledged a reparation of sorts, a redress of $20,000. You know, the loss was much more than that. It was a token.
Yeah, people lost their homes, their businesses. Many people don't know that some German-Americans and Italian-Americans were also incarcerated during World War II.
Not wholesale like the Japanese.
No, but some were. Some were,
yes.
actually. I mean, it was. It went beyond what most people even know about,
and
which is
with
sad.
Those German-Americans and Italian-Americans, they did go through a process of due process.
Mm-hmm.
There was, you know, basis for it. With us, our crime was looking like the people that bombed Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, right.
Only that.
Well, you know, we're not a perfect nation. There's no perfect nation on Earth. There's no perfect marriage. We like to set our
goals. You know what
on.
My father said when I was a teenager and we had those after-dinner discussions? He said that ours is a people's democracy,
mm-hmm.
and it can be as great as the people can be.
Right.
But it's also as fallible as people are.
We're very fragile.
It's very fragile.
Yeah.
And that he said that's why good people have to be actively engaged in the democratic process, holding democracy's feet to the fire.
Absolutely. Hey, George, what accounts for your great popularity personally? I mean, you're the king of, I know you're named after King George VI. Now you're the king of Facebook. How the hell did that happen?
George, I watched your happy dance this morning. I like it.
Well, that's how I celebrated becoming the king.
Yeah.
There was no coronation, only happy dance.
And of course, you have this book, Oh My, right?
Well, you know, the social media success, again, it began with allegiance. Here we had we developed this musical,
mm-hmm.
but it's a little-known story. You know, I'm always amazed by, I mean, east of the Rockies, there are so many people that look to me otherwise well-informed, educated people who tell me that I had no idea something like the internment
yeah.
happened here in the United States. So it's little-known, and it's even less understood. It's a dark, shameful chapter of American history.
Mm-hmm.
And here we have this musical. We have to build an audience for it. How do we do that?
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided, well, there's this thing called social media, and I have this base audience of sci-fi nerds and geeks. And so I thought, well, I'll start tweeting and then a little bit later Facebooking and talking about the subjects that interest them, sci-fi and Star Trek, and throwing in a few science-oriented jokes and things like that. And I discovered that, you know, there were a lot of those people. And but the intent was to build an audience for Allegiance. So I started throwing in some comments about the internment. But also I found that when I threw in some jokes, or even better, funny photos, visuals, that got a lot of likes. And I got a lot of friends. And so I saw the trend. And so I started posting more regularly photos, which I learned that in the lingo of social internet, social media, they're called memes. So I started posting more funny memes, and my audience just grew and grew.
Anyway, George, I think we have to save some time for Wendy on the show.
But, oh, yeah, she's got a lot to share with you, too.
Yeah.
So I'm garrulous, and you have to rein me in.
Yeah, but we really loved and enjoyed having you on, and best of luck with Allegiance and everything else. And you rest that voice, because you're going to need it in the fall for several shows weekly, right?
Well, I'm headed to New York on Monday to promote my new book, Oh My, There Goes the Internet.
Well, we'll get
I need to save my voice for that, too.
And we'll get you down to San Diego maybe to do that, too. We'll talk about that. What do you say?
Great. Yeah. That's a great one. We have a date.
Excellent. Excellent. Richard, anything more for...
George, arigato gozaimasu. Very much appreciated.
Nyongo hanashimasu ka?
Thank you.
All right. You have a great day, a great weekend. We'll talk soon, okay?
Very good.
Okay, bye-bye. We are back with the last segment of It's Your Money in Your Life. Did I say George Takei? It is Takei. Did I say Takei?
You did. It's Takei.
Takei. Anyway, in studio.
Ask Wendy a question.
Yes. We have Wendy Gillespie, the other main cog in the producer wheel here for the show Allegiance. And she lives in Point Loma. She's an entrepreneur with a great executive history herself. And Wendy, how did you get involved with this show?
Well, I always love to say it happened in Cabo. So about 3.5 years ago, I was, again, the stars were aligned, and I was down in Cabo, and I met Jay Kuo, and it was right before the first reading of Allegiance at the Japanese American National Museum. And I've been involved with it ever since as an incredible passion project in my life.
So he invited you up to the reading, and you heard it?
We almost laughed. I said I was one of, like, the five people at the VIP dinner the night before. So.
And it just knocked your socks off when you saw it and you said, hey, this is something I've got to try and help help in some way.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with, I'm an immigrant myself, and there's a resonation of how you relate to the family and how you relate to the story. And the fact that it's all about redemption and second chances really spoke to me. In fact, I love to say, and Jay will tell you that I am the inspiration for the song Second Chances. So, that's a very, very special song for me, a very special show for me.
Very cool. So you helped get it to the Globe, right? I mean,
well, I don't know about that. But certainly I want to consider myself the San Diego connection, I think, for the show. And certainly its biggest cheerleader here in San Diego.
And that was the largest grossing production in the history of the old Globe, correct?
Yes, it was. In 77-year history. And
congratulations.
So we're very, very proud of that. And on top of that, it's an incredible response from the audiences who continue to come back over and over again.
Now, if people in San Diego have questions about the play and its progress, they can reach you where?
They could send me an email at wendy@wendygillespie.com, but please check out the website at www.allegiancemusical.com.
Right. It's a great website, and there's a lot of good history on there. And speaking of which, I mean, this is really musical theater as history with some great images. Whose idea was it to use the actual photographs as backdrops on the stage? That was
true. Well, I think that you'll find that Jay and Lorenzo did a tremendous amount of research in terms of the story, and it's brought a lot of people together where it's being presented for the first time. And actually, Patty Hirahara's family up in Orange County had donated the pictures of Heart Mountain to one of the universities, and we've actually been able to use some of that. So what I love about the show is that it's a total connection of heart and mind. The mind, it connects to the mind because of the historical background of the story, but everyone can relate to the family, the father, the son, the conflict, the resolution, the importance of the family. And one of the things that I love about it is we had three shows that were to high school students, and the letters that we received were just phenomenal. They totally get the themes of the
story. Yeah, that was cool. You put on additional shows during the daytime to allow students to come to how many productions?
The Globe actually had some donors sponsor three student performances, about 1,800 high school students.
Saw it free of charge.
Yes.
Wow. And they came out of there, what, totally wowed, right?
Absolutely. It was absolutely amazing.
Had no clue. Well, I don't follow every play on Broadway, but how many plays, can you even think of that have such an essential piece of American history? You know, I can't think of mostly it's, you know, the producers. I mean, it's music. It's invented stories. Is there anything else that can even compare to this?
In terms of American history, well, I mean, you've got other historical shows, of course, but
it's kind of a league of its own.
But so. And then the other thing about the show is it's G-rated. I mean, how many shows are G-rated? So bring your families.
Yes. Wendy Gillespie, thank you so much. Thank you, George Takei. Thank you, Lorenzo Tioni. Thank you, Courtney, Demi, Richard. You have a great week. And we also have to thank Craig Blanking, who's back in the saddle as our con executive, and Kevin Terrell. What a great job on the board tonight. This was kind of a complicated show, so we thank you for your hard work. You have a great week. We'll see you. Hey, Irwin Jacobs next Sunday. Tune in. Take care. Good night.
Jim is 38, mortgage, married, three great kids. He wants to protect his family with a $500,000 term life insurance policy. What do you think it'll cost him? $100 a month? $60? $40? Actually, none of the above. Jim is in excellent health and can get a 10-year, $500,000 policy through SelectQuote for under $19 a month. Jim's wife, Deirdre, 36, and also in great health, can get a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $16 a month. See how much you can save.
For a free quote, call 1-800-900-2029. That's 1-800-900-2029. 1-800-900-2029. Or go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your premium could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
We follow the story.
Gun violence prevention is the mission that we are on.
Then we lead the conversation.
The president is going to act.
Follow the leader. 7-6.